cloudy and some patchy fog again, low 56. Sunday, partly cloudy, a bit more humid, high 82. Monday, partly sunny with a 40% chance of showers and storms, high 78. Tuesday, partly cloudy, breezy, and a bit cooler, 74 the high. Wednesday, partly cloudy, slight chance of a few showers, high 76. Then for Thursday, partly cloudy with a high of 78. Friday, partly cloudy, a 30% chance of showers and storms. Expect a high around 77. I'm Newsline 9 meteorologist Mike Brunling on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit energysavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. At least I'm in the studio, and Merle Kelch is with us as well, but coming from a secretly undisclosed location. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, everybody, and it is a beautiful morning. I actually happen to be in the Black Hills in the mountains of Leeds, South Dakota.
Ooh.
And started off this morning at 55 degrees. So I am actually sitting in my truck in the parking lot of the lodge.
All right. And you are getting ready for the, is this the weekend of the big Sturgis bike rally, apparently, huh?
Well, the rally is pretty much finished up and done. I got a couple of odds and ends I want to do yet before I head back to Wausau, but we are packing up and coming home today.
All right. You survived?
It's been a fantastic time, and some odd things happened this week, which I got to share one of these, everybody. One of my friends who I am with has friends who are in the radio business in Madison, Wisconsin, and actually happens to be best friends with, if you don't know the name out here, folks, with Jesse James Dupree from the band Jekyll.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden we find ourselves getting a phone call saying, hey, come on over and let's see Ted Nugent together. We didn't realize what this meant, but we found ourselves backstage with Ted Nugent and Jekyll and a couple of other bands, and actually having to sit and relax on Jesse James Dupree's bus, and then went backstage and watched Ted Nugent, which was just like the greatest thing in the world for me. I'm sure you're aghast, but
I am totally aghast. Oh,
but
brother!
It was a fantastic time, and what a lot of fun.
Something tells me Ted Nugent in front of a whole bunch of bikers got pretty political on stage, huh?
No way. I wouldn't believe that at all.
715-845-2155. Despite the fact that Merle is on location today, we can still take your financial questions at that phone number and give us a call here this morning. There was an old song done back in the 70s by the Atlanta Rhythm Section called I'm Not Gonna Let It Bother Me Tonight. And one of the lines was, the world is in an uproar and I see no end in sight. We've got the situation in Iraq. We've got the situation in Gaza and Israel. We've got the situation in Ukraine with Russia. It seems like the world is in an uproar and there is no end in sight. What does this mean for the average investor? And should they be looking at what I believe is in the business is called flights to safety, or should they stay put? What's your take on the situation and what's going to be happening going forward as far as the stock market goes in relation to world happenings?
Sure. You know, Tom, you kind of pop into this, and there's an article that pops up with Mark Hulberg in here and a couple of his different places that that we'll probably chat about, I'm sure, that talk about the same theme. You know, Tom, you and I, we've been doing this program so long together here, and we've seen it happen many times through our tenure together doing this program, is that when political unrest happens inside of the world economy, we have to stop and say, okay, what's happening inside of the market? Is it because of some sort of a numerical economic scenario, or is it because of geopolitical? And what happens is geopolitical risk, because we see the marketplace drop, but at the same time, we can look around and see, is there some opportunity right now, simply because those geopolitical things tend to resolve themselves. And as a result, we tend to spend more money as a global economy. If we go into some sort of a conflict, we spend more money, time, and energy running to flights of safety, which means prices tend to drop and move around. So we have the ability to move money here locally, actually within the U.S. economy. And we have the ability to move money around from place to place. And again, all the best to the people who are in those areas, and no disrespect from that. So sometimes you just simply have to sit back and take a look. Now, can we time the market in times like this? Heck no. We have no idea what's going to happen from day one to day two. I mean, who could predict that we'd have President Obama within the course of a couple of days saying we're going to go ahead and allow airstrikes to happen in certain locations inside of Iraq? And who knew that the Russian government said we're going to back away from our military exercises in Ukraine to settle stuff down? We don't know those things. But what we can do is to make sure that we're still diversified, have a portfolio, and have our portfolio become a little bit more defensive. And as you talked about, I'll talk about in a second. But we can do those types of things knowing that at some particular point in time, things are going to resolve themselves. Now, if we take a look at it from an economic front, from the economy, the economy is doing okay. Again, not great or beautiful or good, but it's doing okay. It's plodding along in that workhorse type of mentality. So with that, we can't judge or predict the marketplace. It's simply not going to work from that standpoint. But what we do have the ability to do is to make those defensive moves. Defensive moves are this. If we take a look at money outflows this past month, I should say these past couple of weeks here, especially since July 24th, which was our peak in the marketplace, we've seen a huge amount of outflows leaving the stock market directly and largely going into money market accounts, a little bit inside of municipal bonds, but largely going into money market accounts. And so that's one of those defensive types of moves. Another defensive move that we'd find is that money would leave the marketplace or leave stock, would go into the stock marketplace, but go into defensive types of stocks, stocks of goods and services we use every day. You know, the Colgate, and I'm not recommending anybody buy these, but I'm giving these as an example. And companies, those products and things we use every day, Campbell Soup, Colgate, Palmolive, Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, things that have products that we use and need in our everyday life. And so we're seeing a lot of that sort of stuff happen and positioning itself right now. And, of course, the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumping up so much yesterday. The Dow, remember, folks, is just only 30 stocks, but it's the 30 largest stocks really in the world. With that being the case, we saw money running into the Dow, which would have been a defensive move, and predictable, you just don't know exactly when.
715-845-2155 is the number to call here. Well, if you can't time the market, then how do you know that you are diversified and when you want to move things around to different areas in your portfolio to stay diversified, how do you know when to do that?
Well, you know, Tom, let me back up one step. In here, I want to go to our one of the people that we watch all the time on commentary, I'm probably using the wrong term, Mark Hulbert, who is has an article and he talks about trying to time the market. And so in here, I apologize, I'm going to pop on a couple of things I'll read verbatim, but it makes a lot of sense. And we take a look inside of his article. He tracks 81 market timers, which are people that have newsletters telling people to buy and sell and buy and sell, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so of those 81, he goes from March 2000 to October 2002, which was the dot-com type of an area. And in that dot-com area, this goes back to the gentleman, Mr. Russell, Richard Russell, who predicted that the Dow was going to go down by missing it by one day in August of 1987. We had that big 25% correction and drop in the marketplace. So he's included in this mix. And in his study, he takes a look at it from March 2000 to 2002, and only 11 of 81 of them had actually made any money from March 2002. So these are the people who are trying to time us, telling us when to buy and when to sell, okay? So he then carried that over from March 2002 and brought it out to today. And of all those 11 people who made money during that period of time, all of them had a negative balance. Comparatively, if we take a look at the Wilshire 5000, which has 5,000 stocks going all the way across the U.S. as far as investment goes, that would have been up. I apologize. They were not negative. They were 0.08 up during 2000 to date. But in comparison, the Wilshire 5000, which is a buy and hold scenario, had an annualized gain of 4.2%. So what's the difference between those? Well, first of all, I think you use the Wilshire 5000 because there's so many stocks in that index that those 5,000 stock has really got a large net. It's got a lot of breadth in the marketplace, and so it's diversified by itself. And in doing so, we can look at that and say, well, it doesn't matter if they're in or out. They have all those different stocks, so it's diversified. So a diversified portfolio in this instance did better than trying to time the market, which only averaged 0.08%. One of the reasons is we're based upon, as we're trying to time the market, we're basing it upon our guesstimate, somebody else's guesstimate, on when the market's going to go up and down. And again, especially times during geopolitical instability, we just don't know. And so it's difficult to do so. Looking at the pure numbers, if we didn't have any sort of geopolitical conflict, I think timing services and that whole bit really are the case. Now, what's interesting in here is let me go to a statement that Warren Buffett once said, and Warren and I were having lunch again yesterday. He was out here on his motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
And we do a lot of work together, Warren and I. Oh, okay, maybe not. But he says the time to buy is at the time of the worst pessimism. The time to sell is at the time of the best optimism. And so we take a look at the marketplace. We have the geopolitical instability going on. We have an economy that's going along okay. And so then all of a sudden we have record outflows over the course of the last 6 months that happened over the last couple of weeks. And so with that being the case, now the market jumps back up. So if we did buying at the time of worst pessimism, it would have been the last few weeks. And with that being the case, it would have been a good, pretty good time to buy, according to Warren Buffett. Now, that being the case, Warren Buffett does have a lot of cash he's sitting on, simply because, in his words, he just can't find anything he'd like to buy right now. But remember, folks, Warren Buffett doesn't go around and buying individual shares and mutual funds like you and I. He just buys the whole company.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a different animal in there. But it's been a pretty good time to buy over the course of the last few weeks because we got a discount prior to January. Yeah, the stock market dropping down really hasn't lost us a ton of dough, per se, because remember, the stock market started out on January 1 at 15,576, and the Dow's, I'm sorry, pardon me, at 16,576, and we're now sitting at 16,553. So where are we? Well, we're really back in where we were on January 1st. So really not all that bad. Granted, it is August, but we didn't have this huge fallout that we saw happen in 2007, 2008, especially in 2008 in that fall of the year in September and October. So we're still okay. I mean, we're still holding in there just fine, but we just have to make sure that we're understanding what's happening within a growing economy, a very stimulative interest rate inside of the economy. At the same time, the geopolitical rate, uncertainties are jumping things around.
You mentioned that Wilshire 5000 would have been up 4% or so, and the idea of convincing not only the market timers but also your clients that 4% is acceptable. And most people, I would think, would say, well, that's not acceptable. I want more than that. And then they'll take more risk. Convincing people that 4% is a good return, is that a tough sell?
Well, you know, it's not convincing people that 4% is a rate of return, because we don't know what a rate of return is going to be inside of a marketplace. But there are very measured ways inside of this inside of the market that you can actually say, well, this gives us our area of best risk and risk for rate of return. It's a thing modern portfolio theorists talk about, and Harry Markowitz and Merton Miller certainly won their Nobel Prizes on it, building what's called the efficient market frontier, something that's also easily tracked using Morningstar and various things like this, where we can take a look at a portfolio and say, okay, if we construct a portfolio that has A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, et cetera, and we construct that portfolio, we can see in this portfolio that based upon past returns, and there's software that does this, folks, we can see that this is going to give us our best rate of return for the least amount of risk if we look at it for the past 10 years. And though, remember, past history is no guarantee of the future, but it gives us an indication that we're in the neighborhood, at least, of having that best rate of return for the least amount of risk. Now, what's that rate of return going to be? Well, we don't necessarily know. We certainly have some hopes and some expectations, but generally, we're going to have a growing economy inside of the U.S., and as long as we're having a growing economy inside of the U.S. as well as internationally, we should make some money. Guaranteed? No. Do we know exactly what it's going to be? No, but history tells us we're going to be okay with that. Now, that's the type of analysis and things that you have to look at, is to get that best rate of return, least amount of risk, that efficient market frontier, that sweet spot, if you will. You have to be able to measure that and take a look at it. And part of the monitoring that you do is your advisor should be looking at this. He may or may not be telling you, but certainly they're looking at the portfolios and saying, are we close? Are we in the right neighborhood? Are we way off? Do we have too much risk for the less rate of return that we're getting and so forth? So we want to try to hit that sweet spot. That's our measure. We want to take a look at where the best rate of return, least amount of risk. Now, sometimes you have to tell clients, well, we need to take a little bit more risk because they don't have any. For example, if you have a client that says, I need to earn about a 3.5% or a 4% rate of return, but all their money is sitting inside of checking accounts, well, now you have to have that discussion, Tom, and saying, well, you're not going to cut it from there, okay? And so we have to look at that. The other part of that is to convince your clients to maybe do something that they're not doing for their own betterment. You have to maybe put some guarantees in it. Again, which those are things you can do with, you know, municipal bonds. You can have guarantees with fixed accounts. You can have guarantees with variable annuities with some fixed options. So sometimes you have to say, yep, so we can do this, but we can put a safety net behind it. So there's different options you can do, but again, you have to make sure you're diversified in all these options we talked about. Make sure that that's the case. You have that diversification inside your portfolio.
715-845-2155. We're going to take a break, come back with more. We're talking to Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, and your questions are welcome here on WSAU. Got about 3 minutes.
Did you know by
all of us want to make a difference. As veterans, we committed to protect our country. We served and sacrificed for the things that mattered most. Those experiences shaped our lives. Now we're husbands, wives, parents, and friends. And sometimes we forget that the biggest challenge can be asking for support. The Veterans Crisis Line is here for veterans. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. It matters.
Owning your own business is one of the most rewarding things you'll ever do. But it certainly isn't easy. For nearly 50 years, business owners have been getting the help they need from SCORE. All for free.
My SCORE mentor helped me take the first step.
He helped me create a business plan and helped me implement it.
SCORE mentors are passionate about sharing their expertise to help small businesses achieve success.
I could not have done it alone.
Whether you're a startup or an existing business, SCORE mentors can help you achieve your goals and help your business grow. With more than 12,000 volunteers with real-world business experience, SCORE is ready and willing to help make your dreams come true.
SCORE helped me to make the unimaginable possible, all for free.
Visit SCORE.org to get started today. SCORE, for the life of your business.
While some get ready for vacation,
golf clubs, swim trunks,
we have your news, weather, and traffic to get your day ready.
Suntan lotion, government-paid caddy.
Hi.
Seth, Tom, and Chris.
Sand, flown in from Hawaii, paid for by...
Oh, wait, let me guess. Us?
Bingo. See what happens when you listen to the radio?
Then don't forget to bring your radio.
You are one smart radio listener.
That's a lot of sand, Mr.
Oh.
Yeah?
Those fun little drink umbrellas? Can't forget those.
On WSAU.
We're here today to ask people about marriage.
For starters, what's the best thing about being married?
Who I get to stay married to.
Togetherness.
To me, is having a companion.
My favorite thing about being married is that I have a partner.
Do you think your marriage is good for more than just the two of you?
Does it influence those around us?
Yeah, I think.
In a positive way?
I think so.
I would hope that people would see that when we're together that we really have a very true affection for each other.
What everybody wants, and we know we're lucky to have it.
The energy we give out in our home, I think, spreads out to other people.
Your marriage just continues to go on and on and on.
Oh, sure, and affect generations after us.
I think it really sort of stabilizes your whole community. It's the cornerstone of a society, right?
Sounds like a good marriage goes a long way.
It touches a lot of people.
Want to improve your marriage? For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Church.
And we're back here on WSAU. We're back here on WSAU, making financial sense with Merle Kelch. Merle joining us on the phone today from South Dakota. And, you know, we mentioned some of the calamities that are befalling the world during our first segment. The one we didn't even touch on was the outbreak of Ebola in Africa and the battle that's raging now between the health authorities and the virus that is spreading. And I guess you don't like to think about taking advantage in a situation like this. And I guess taking advantage is not the right word. But if Ebola ever did come to the United States, obviously it would have a drastic effect on the economy. And there's been some research done as to how the economy reacted during health crisis. And there's one I'm looking at here that looks back to the worst pandemic in U.S. history. That was, of course, the flu epidemic back in 1918 and 1919. And during that two-year period, the stock market actually went up during that pandemic, which killed millions of people worldwide.
Sure.
Talk about what to do in a situation like that, especially if you are heavily invested in the healthcare industry or maybe thinking about that at this point in time.
Well, this kind of goes back to our discussion we had about geopolitical risks and war and that type of thing. Things that would happen, from a healthcare standpoint, would have an effect on an economy in regards to people not working, slowing productivity, and that whole bit. The answer is absolutely would. There's no doubt about that. But we have to look at it then, Tom, in the sense that if we look at it in regards to having to have medicine, healthcare, hospitals, beds, insurance products, gauze, band-aids, all the sort of stuff we're going to have just in heightened use in those various products. And so as a result of that, I would suspect that if that were the case, it would have much that same effect on stocks in the defense sector. We would end up having to, we'd end up seeing those stocks rise again. Now, again, I hope this doesn't occur, but that's one of the areas that happens. Is what products do we need and services do we need to generate and to build and to make to be able to help these types of things, and that's what would occur. Now, there's a Canadian firm, and boy, I'm trying to find the article that I had here. There's a Canadian firm that just entered trials for Ebola and that virus in regards to having it become a U.S. Manufacturer. I'm trying to find the name of that company. But this certainly would just be an example of what we're talking about, and bear with me here as I try to find it. It's not coming. I think it was Tamikish or something like that. It was a Canadian company.
It doesn't spring to mind, but obviously the companies that are able to find the cures or at least the vaccines for these situations certainly would become very valuable.
Well, yeah, exactly. Now, sadly, I have to say that one of the reasons we probably don't have a vaccine or a cure for Ebola is because it hasn't been profitable. It happens so infrequently, and we've been able to have it contained worldwide so much. We've been able to keep it contained in small areas that there hasn't been a vaccine for it or a cure for it.
Is that
I think it's sad in this nature, but that's one of the reasons it hasn't happened is because it hasn't been profitable.
Well, is that an argument for government involvement? And I know people hate the government being involved in anything that private industry is also involved in. But if private industry says that something like this, a worldwide health risk, is not profitable for them to do research in for a cure, then isn't that a mantle that the, and maybe it's already happening, the Centers for Disease Control or other branches of the government should be dealing with? World Health Organization, things like that.
I don't want to come over to your side or make any appearances, but I'm going to have to here for a minute.
There are good things that the government can do that private industry can't or won't.
There's a few. This might be one of them. Okay. You know, in here, I'd be surprised if it wasn't happening already.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if that wasn't the case, because it only makes sense that would be the case. But I think so. If there's something that, though it's small, and it's not going to be profitable for private companies who wish to do so, I think that's where the government should be stepping in, especially with the agencies and the great agencies we have, such as the CDC. I'd be surprised if they haven't already developed, but maybe don't have it so that it has the ability to be mass developed at this particular point in time, and that's where they may need the private sector. But I would I'd be surprised if something like that wasn't the case. And certainly, I think that's a perfect example of where our government should step in and have the ability to help out, not only for us, but worldwide, because this Ebola just seems to be such a nasty, nasty thing.
715-845-2155, the number to call here. We'll take a break for some news. We'll come back with more. The phone lines are open. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call here this morning. We'll be right back on WSAU. Got about 3 minutes or so. Ooh.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
I kept on trying, learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
We did it, so can you.
For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
For those with mental or substance use disorders, what does recovery look like? It's a transformation. It's a supporting hand. It's new beginnings. When does recovery start? It starts when you ask for help and support. Join the Voices for Recovery. Speak up. Reach out.
For confidential information on mental and substance use disorders, including prevention and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9. WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. There appears to be no end in sight to the violence in the Gaza conflict. The Israeli military is reporting today that at least 70 rockets have been fired from Gaza into Israel during the past 24 hours. Gaza health officials claim that five Palestinians were killed today by Israeli airstrikes and five yesterday, including three children. Also, the Pentagon says a second humanitarian airdrop was conducted in northern Iraq last night. The president authorized the military to make drops of food and water to help thousands of Iraqis who have been stranded after fleeing a violent surge by Islamist militants. Some of the children involved in that traffic crash on Highway 52 were released from the hospital yesterday. One teenager was killed and two others remain in critical condition. The group was traveling to the Eau Claire Dells for a swimming trip when their SUV left Highway 52, went into a ditch, and overturned. Flames from a burning apartment building under construction in Madison could be seen as far away as Sun Prairie. Smoke from the fire on Madison's far east side was so heavy it affected traffic on I-3990 starting about 7:30 last night. Firefighters say the top two floors of the building were fully engulfed when they arrived. The Packers begin preseason football tonight. They take on the Tennessee Titans on the road. You can hear the game right here. Packer game day begins at 5. That means Brewer baseball will be moved to our sister station, Fox Sports Radio, AM 1390 and FM 93.9. They'll have a doubleheader of Brewers baseball followed by Woodchucks baseball. The Woodchucks lost last night in Duluth. They play in Thunder Bay tonight. The Brewers take on the Dodgers once again after rallying for a win last night. The weather forecast today, another nice one, partly cloudy and a high around 81. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low down to 55. Partly cloudy tomorrow, high of 82. Monday, a chance of showers and storms with a high of 78. And Tuesday, partly cloudy, breezy and cooler, a high of 74. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Have you heard the buzz about West Nile virus? Protect yourself and your family from the mosquito bites that spread the virus. When you go outside, use mosquito repellent containing DEET. When possible, wear long sleeve shirts and pants. And remove standing water around your home where mosquitoes breed. Anyone can become infected, but if you're over 50, you're at higher risk for severe disease or even death from West Nile virus. Remember, the best defense comes from things you can do yourself. Fight the bite. Tell mosquitoes to buzz off.
The office. The dreary, empty, soul-crushing office. At least there's one thing you could do to brighten your day. Check in 3 or 4 times for a quick news update, some entertaining talk, or just hear some insight and opinions on what's going on in the world.
It made me really down today, but when I put on the radio and I heard you talking about it, it really raised my spirit.
Online or on air.
WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we're back here. I'm in the studio. Merle's out on location. He's taking your question, 715-845-2155.
Folks, the opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Determine which investments may be appropriate for you. Consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Folks, this show contains forward-looking statements which may not come true. Securities and Investment Advisory Services offered through HBAC Incorporated. Member FINRA, SIPC, HBAC Incorporated, Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. Now, folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
There's an article or a short little article from Mark Hulbert called The Virtues of Consistency, and he talks about how many investors get antsy with the boring consistency of their portfolio if it's only bringing in a small or smaller but consistent rate of return. They think that it should be more, and they're willing to put up with the roller coaster, and they take their advisors to task or even replace their advisors the first time that things don't look good one way or the other.
Sure.
Talk about that a little bit and what you counsel people as to whether or not consistent but small returns better than the roller coaster ride of high returns and then losses to follow.
You know, I look at this backwards than many other people. I always try to assess people's risk first and say, what's your risk and stomach for the marketplace? And so I'll talk with people and say, if you had $10,000 and it dropped down to $9,000 tomorrow, but you're investing for 5 years, how would that affect you? And if a person says, well, it would affect me at all because I'm looking at it for 5 years and I know the market fluctuates, well, then they're probably a pretty good candidate for investing in a marketplace. But if a purposeless person says, well, if I had that $10,000 and tomorrow went down to $9,000, I'm going to have a heart attack and I won't stand it. Well, then that person probably shouldn't be having the risk of the marketplace itself. Now, that being the case, this actually is a true story and a true client. It was a client who said, I can't take the stock market. I don't want any money inside of the stock market. I don't want to have any risk of the marketplace itself. I don't want to have any fluctuation. I just want to have more of a straight type of a rate of return. As we go through the question, and their determination was if their $10,000 went to $9,900, they'd probably call me, but they'd be okay. You know, so that's a pretty small fluctuation. So with that being the case then, probably would have been about a year and a half ago or so, we had the anniversary, our review in December with them, one coming up. So there was the market did a healthy rate of return. That's we saw some 14 to 20% rates of returns in 2013, depending upon how you were invested. And that should be everybody out here listening. If you're investing in a marketplace, you probably should have been in that neighborhood, in my opinion, at least. So with that, as he saw the markets, of course, at 15, 20%. His friends and neighbors are telling him how great everything was. He comes back to me, and he was not a happy camper because his portfolio only did about 4.1%. He said, how come I'm only at 4.1%? I said, remember a year ago, and you said you wanted nothing inside of the stock market. You didn't want the risk. Yeah, I know, but I wanted a rate of return. Well, it doesn't go both ways. Because you can't now just safely say, well, now I want to be the stock market because the stock market may be more money, but I still don't want the volatility or risk. And so in this instance, the conversation had to become and say, you know, this is consistent with what you wanted from a risk standpoint, and we can't change that. You can't just simply say I'm a conservative investor but make my portfolio risky. It doesn't quite work out that way in the investment world. So we don't try to convince our clients to take more risk than what they can stomach. Everybody has to be able to sleep at night. So from that standpoint, you say, well, how much risk can a person have? You construct a portfolio, again, as we talked about early on, to try to get that best rate of return for the least amount of risk or for the risk that the client can stomach or hold on to and still sleep at night. Then from there, it determines what the rate of return is going to end up being. In some years, that might be that rate of return is going to be a negative percentage. Some years, it might be only a percent or two. And then maybe 2013 or like 2013, we have just a banner year some years. And this year's, could be okay at the end of the year by the time we get everything straightened out. Remember, the fall tends to be the time of the year that we tend to make a little bit more money. The summer and specifically August tends to be kind of an odd month. September tends to pick stuff back up.
715-845-2155. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. Let's read a little article about McDonald's. It seems like we might be falling out of love with McDonald's. They have suffered their worst performance in the last 10 years in the month of July. And there's reason, according to some analysts, to believe that things could keep getting worse for McDonald's. McDonald's used to be one of the old standbys, right? And now maybe not so much. Talk about that a little bit.
All I know is that when I go there for breakfast at 11 o'clock, they're serving lunch. It drives me absolutely batty. You know, I don't know the answer for McDonald's, but there's a lot of competition out there. As we've seen the economy improve over the course of the last couple of years, and this is my opinion, and actually conversations that I've had with my friends and colleagues, is that as we've seen the economy improve, notice that you're starting to see a lot more restaurants popping up, albeit small chains or local restaurants. But you're seeing more restaurants starting to pop up, which tends to be the case as you're having an expanding and improving economy. Now, with those, a lot of them actually have more improved and more flavorful types of foods. McDonald's, don't get me wrong, who could go wrong with a Big Mac? Everybody loves a Big Mac. But at the same time, if you're starting to watch your weight, which, by the way, I'm going to begin once again on my 18th or 19th consecutive Monday for a diet. I begin again this coming Monday. And so,
tell me how that works out. Yeah.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
So with this, we look at it and say, well, is McDonald's the option that I want? And the answer is probably not. But there's other locations and restaurants I can go to, and I can say, well, I want a 6-inch sub, and I want it on whole wheat, and I don't want any mayonnaise on it. But I want to have some grass and some spinach and some lettuce and maybe a green pepper for flavor, and that's all I want for a sandwich. I can do that there. I can't do that at McDonald's. And so I think we see those types of things happening and weeding into or getting into McDonald's menu, per se. And though McDonald's continues to try to set stuff up so that they're having more healthy options, I don't think that's the mentality when people are thinking about that and they want to be active or more active lifestyle. I don't think they're thinking about McDonald's. And I think that's where McDonald's has to change some of its menu items to try to bring that customer back in.
You mentioned earlier the company that it is developing, the Canadian company developing the anti-Ebola drug. It's called Tecmira.
Tecmira, there we go.
T-E-K-M-I-R-A, and their stock is way up. It hasn't been okayed for use yet in the United States by the FDA, but it's close, apparently. And there is an American company also working on an Ebola virus, and as we mentioned, a virus vaccine. And as we mentioned, they are developing it in conjunction with the U.S. Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. Now, should you go out and look for this Tecmira stock and add it to your portfolio immediately, or what?
Well, here's what I would at least advise. You know, who knows how long the trials can be? They can tend to be a few years. But at the same time, I think it's a stock that we look at and say, are they profitable? Are they making money in other areas first? Or is this going to be the only drug that's going to make them money? You know, are they a profitable company? Are they making money? And are they developing something that's going to be good for the future? You know, so we look at all those questions first and then think to ourselves, well, if something does happen with Ebola, then it goes around. Will they be a company that has the ability to profit, not only profit, but as a profit serving people and helping people? If that's the case, then I think you tend to have a winner. But it's got to make money anyway. It can't make and hold out that it's only going to make money on this particular stock or this adventure. It's got to be a company that can hold up on its own. And then I would look at it. But I wouldn't expect immediate results because those results, of course, on the stock have to go through FDA trials, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, we have the ability for it to really make us some money as it starts selling its product.
One other company I wanted you to touch on a little bit, Walmart, of course, another company we have a love-hate relationship with. Love the prices, hate the way they treat their employees in many cases and some of the other business practices. But they apparently have had a tough go of it recently, but expected to turn around in the second quarter. And they're bringing in a new executive to run Walmart. Greg Foran is his name. He's a veteran retail executive, but he's from New Zealand, who has never worked in the U.S. What's your take on Walmart going forward and how the stock will react and whether or not it should be a big part of your portfolio at this point?
Yeah, I've got a lot of opinions on Walmart, one way or another. I loved the Walmart when I was a kid and going to school in Whitewater, and they put a brand-new Walmart store in a county seat, which is what they did. And across every tractor trailer they had, it said, "We buy American," or "We, you know, made in America." And and they had that banner. And whatever they tried to do, they tried to have as much American product inside of the store as possible.
I don't think that's the case anymore.
No, I don't. And I think some retailer that has the gumption to do so, I think would do very well, and I think would have a lot of patronage going to it. Right now, I think what Walmart is doing is making everything as cheap as possible, and to try to make everything as cheap as possible, I think they're getting everything cheap on the inside. When it comes to, in some instances, I'm not saying all, because I know some great people, for example, in a Wausau Walmart store who are very helpful, but a lot of time you get the cheaper service, you get the cheaper product, but God, sometimes you just have to go there for some things. But I have to tell you that one time I went there to buy some fish, and it said product of China for my fish. That really bothered me. I don't know that I like that idea. So hopefully, this person from New Zealand sees that. Oh, by the way, now it seems like they're importing executives, too.
It could be worse. I'm reading a story right here about Walmart in China. And, of course, we heard the story a few weeks ago about the McDonald's in China serving expired meat. And that caused use of McDonald's in China to drop immensely. Walmart in China now being accused of not only serving expired meat, but also using recycled cooking oil to prepare food in their stores. So, sure. I mean, it could be worse. We could be going to a Walmart in China at this point.
You got a point. Now, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
In the Walmart inside of China, do they have American products?
That's a good question.
Just a second.
Something tells me, well, maybe they do in some cases. I don't know. We need to take a break here. We'll come back with more. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU. All right, about 2 or 3 minutes here. Yeah, okay.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Excuse me, have you heard of radon?
Is that a gas?
Is it something that comes up out the ground or something?
Well, it's like poison gas.
Something dangerous that you're supposed to check on to make sure it's not in your home.
Now it's your turn. Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True, radon is a radioactive gas. True or false? The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
True, I didn't know that.
Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Answer true or false. Homes with radon problems can be fixed. True. Homes with radon problems can be fixed.
So what do you do about it?
I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
If I don't take care of it, nobody else will.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
An NFL playbook. Hundreds of pages filled with a language that would seem to be foreign to a layman.
Listen up!
But not a lineman.
Flip right, double X jet, 36 counter, naked waggle at 7, X quarter.
For the next several weeks, our rookies, veterans, and wannabes will speak nothing but...
Y-396 bag, B-hand, Z-pop.
Packers and Titans Saturday night game coverage at 5 on News Talk Sports, WSAU.
This is a simple game.
And we're back here. I'm in the studio. Merle's out on location. And Merle, we've got some calls. So let's go to the phone here. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Hi, this is Ray.
Hey, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Morning, Ray.
Good morning. I'd like to know the advantages and disadvantages of our shares for mutual funds versus the front load A shares and the higher fee shares. So you can just discuss the R shares. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks for the call.
R shares is a new one. Now, this again, it may sound kind of funny, but traditionally inside of mutual funds, you have usually A shares, B shares, C shares. But there's a lot of companies now that are coming out with some sort of a designer type of a share, whether it's an R share. We've had S shares and L shares. We hear all these different shares. You know, when it comes to a mutual fund, we have to look at what the expenses are. And if you look inside of the prospectus of it, it'll tell you how much that mutual fund is going to cost from a charge standpoint over a 10-year period of time. For example, believe it or not, the A share, which is the one that we pay up front, tends to be the least expensive. And the reason is because we pay the sales charges and expenses up front one time, and then we don't have any ongoing expenses as a result of any sales charges or anything of that nature afterwards. And so it tends to be one of our least expensive on a long-term basis. As we're a B share mutual fund, very rarely used anymore today, Ray. A B share mutual fund tend to be the most expensive because though it didn't charge you any money up front, there's a constant percentage taken out of the center. C-share mutual funds are almost like a magic cup. You just have an annual management fee, and that annual management fee can anywhere from a half a percent to a percent, sometimes more, depending upon the mutual fund family. So again, the R-share is probably some sort of a mixture of those two things. Again, best place to look, pop open the prospectus. You should have gotten one of those if you're considering the fund. If you have not gotten one of those, ask the advisor that's proposing it to you or look online and look for the R-share. And again, they'll usually take $10,000 over 10 years and show you what the expenses are on all the various share classes of the fund and determine which one might be the appropriate thing for you. I always like the one that's going to, I don't care what it costs, but I want the one that's going to cost me the least over a 7 or 10-year period of time. That's how long I want to hold an investment. I'm not going to invest for a year or 2 years. I want to invest this fund for a long period of time, and so that's the option I'll choose. So whether that's the A share, the R share, or the I share, whichever it might be, or the various shares that this fund family comes up with, that's what I would take a look at. And Ray, hope this helps out for you.
All right, let's go back to the phone here. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Gene.
Hey, Gene, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Morning, Gene.
Good morning. In the world of 3D printing, there's you got the hardware side, you have the software side. Do you have any recommendations as, who's going to take the lead as far as the manufacturer of 3D printing? And then who's going to be on the software side of that issue with 3D printing? What are your thoughts
All right, thanks for the call.
Okay. Gene, you're hitting upon something that's of great interest to me, and I'm finding myself doing more and more reading and research on. My opinion is in this whole thing is that the software, I think, is going to be pretty much basic. I mean, a lot of the software, I think, is being done now is almost using a CAD program, or at least a modification of that. The printing machines are going to come out, and the printing machines are going to do everything. But quite honestly, the place where I think some of the money is going to be made on is the companies that are developing the polymers and the plastics and the various printing materials. That's the part I seem to find the most interest on. Because eventually what you're going to happen is somebody's going to learn how to build a 3D printer. And, of course, what U.S. manufacturing or global manufacturing does is somebody's going to learn how to build it bigger, faster, quicker, cheaper. But the materials that go into it, more and more people around the world, as we start making stuff individually for ourselves, I think the materials that are going into it, I think that's where the money's made. That's my opinion. I don't have any names for you, but that's where I would start taking a look at, Gene.
All right, 715-845-2155. We've got a couple of minutes left. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. You had an article that caught your eye that you wanted to touch on a little bit.
Folks, I want to pop up. There's an article in here from Quentin Fortrell from MarketWatch.com. It says the five reasons not to retire inside the United States.
The five reasons not to retire in the United States.
Not to retire inside the United States.
If you had the option.
If you had the option.
And many people don't.
But many people don't. With this, I look at this because it tells us the things that we're looking at during retirement. whether or not we want to use them inside the United States or outside, it's a bit cheaper. But it's the things we have to look at and consider us. You know, one thing that has happened here, folks, is since 2002, to date, we have three times as many Social Security checks being sent abroad versus inside the United States. So one of the reasonings that they're giving for going around the world is, number one, is that property taxes overseas are often lower. Certainly the case. So we look around and say, well, geez, what are our property taxes? What I expect them to be during retirement? And is that a concern that I need to take a look at wherever I'm living? So if you want to live in Wisconsin, or you want to live in the state of Washington, or you want to live in Florida, or you want to live in Texas, what are the property taxes going to be? And that's one of the considerations we have to have. Wherever we're going to retire, can we afford the property taxes, and we have enough money to be able to do so? And what direction are they going? The other part of this is, so many of us say we want to stay around our children and our grandchildren. Well, what's happening today is, because of social media and software programs such as Skype, FaceTime, Facebook, we have the ability to connect with our relatives from abroad pretty inexpensively. I can actually remember I was in a part of a conversation with one of my buddies. His daughter was going to school in Ireland, and he says, oh, I got to stop. He says, it's my FaceTime phone call with my daughter. So they got together, and as we were sitting there, he had a 3-5 minute conversation with the daughter and said hello to her. I'm using FaceTime over his phone. So the technology is out there for us to be abroad or to travel and still be out there and continue to be in touch with our children and grandchildren. Number three in the reason for it is escape from political drama in Washington. We should all just run away from that one, whichever side you're on. It's just crazy. That was an attempt at humor there, Tom. But, that was it. Next, a concern over health care costs. America costs a lot for health care, or for a lot of health coverage. Regardless of what insurance you have, a knee surgery here costs 4 to 5 times more than other parts of the world, just to have a knee replacement done, just for an example. So America costs a lot for health care. Don't get me wrong. I think we've got some of the best in the world, if not the best in the world. But it costs a lot of money to get a lot of routine things done. And so we have to consider ourselves, what's going to happen with health care. So these are the questions during retirement we need to know about. And also in here, the further we go from home, the further or the cheaper it tends to get. You know, for example, if we're going to retire in the Czech Republic, it's probably a whole heck of a lot cheaper than if we're retiring in northern Wisconsin, simply because the costs are a whole heck of a lot less. Not to mention, it might be a little difficult since we don't speak the language, at least not most of us. But those are things we have to consider, is what are the general costs that are going around for us during retirement? And this article then tends to pop up those concerns that we have to have, all of us, for retirement. People here in these articles have just simply solved it by moving elsewhere and into other countries.